Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. We have science fiction in this hour. Later on from the Exploring Tomorrow program from 1957. But first, it's X-1 with the Frederick Pohl story, Tunnel Under the World, an NBC episode from March 14, 1956.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, your home will be filled with the voices of top entertainers and fascinating experts in the homemaking field tomorrow when Virginia Graham and Mike Wallace bring you another broadcast of NBC's Weekday. Among the special guests is Rita Gamm, Hollywood star and one of Grace Kelly's prospective bridesmaids. And Rita will be joined by a singer whose unique style is well known to as many fans, Johnny Ray. Then from Britain, it's actor Trevor Howard. Meet them all tomorrow when NBC's Weekday brings you another day of fact and fun on this station. Now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, a story by Frederick Pohl, Tunnel Under the World.
On the morning of June 15th, Guy Burkhart woke up screaming. It was more real than any dream he had ever had in his life. He could still hear and feel that sharp metal-ripping explosion, that searing wave of heat. He sat up.
Mary! 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 Where are you?
Guy, what's wrong? You're trembling.
Where were you?
In the kitchen, cooking breakfast. What is it?
I don't know. A dream, I guess. An explosion.
Did you say an explosion?
Yes.
But that's the dream I had.
What?
I dreamed there was a big explosion, and then something sort of hit me on the head.
Holy smokes, maybe there really was some sort of explosion, and it started us dreaming.
Well, there'll be an explosion down at your office if you don't hurry and get to work.
Coming in on the bus, Burkhart watched to see if there was any evidence of an explosion. There wasn't. If anything, the town looked better than ever. The only thing that seemed strange to him was the fact that none of the usual crowd was on the bus. He was a little relieved when his old pal, Henry Swanson, finally got on.
Excuse me.
Now, Henry!
Pardon me, sir?
Henry, what's the matter with you? It's me, Guy Burkhart.
Burkhart, sorry, I don't believe we've met.
What? Henry, for Pete's sake, it's me.
If you'll excuse me, this is my stop.
Well, I'll be... How do you like that?
Guy Burkhart got off in front of the gigantic Control Chemical building, took the elevator to the 98th floor where he had worked in the accounting department for 12 years. It wasn't until he was almost at his floor that he realized the speaker was not playing the usual commercials.
Friends, are you happy with your present home freezer? Of course not. Well, the answer to your problems is a Feco freezer. Feco freezers are better freezers. Most wives would do anything for a Feco freezer. Friends, are you happy with your your present home freezer.
Morning, Miss Horn.
Good morning, Miss Burkhart.
Well, new hairdo, I see, huh?
Why, yes. Do you like it?
It makes a lot of difference in your appearance. Mr. Barth in?
No, sir. He had an appointment with Mr. Dorchin of the Human Research Institute.
Today? But today's the 15th of June. He has to sign the quarterly statement.
He said he wouldn't be in.
Huh, that's mighty peculiar.
Yes, sir.
Oh, by the way, Miss Horn, what the devil is a feckle freezer?
A feckle freezer?
There's some new copy on the elevator commercial. Dorchin must have landed another account. Feckle freezers.
I really don't know, Mr. Burkhart.
Huh. It's a funny day. Can't quite put my finger on it, but there's something strange going on.
He couldn't shake the thought out of his mind. It persisted all through the day and through dinner. He was still brooding as he and Mary got ready for bed.
Tired, dear?
Hmm? Oh, no.
Anything wrong?
I don't know.
Well, I guess I'll get a good night's sleep. Coming?
I think I'll sit up and read for a while.
Well, good night, darling.
Night, dear.
At exactly midnight, Guy Burkhart lapsed into a sudden, deep sleep. And the following morning, he woke up, screaming.
Ah! Darling, what is it? What's wrong?
Nothing. Bad dream, I guess.
Oh, you gave me such a shock.
I seem to be having a lot of nightmares lately.
Really?
Yes, the one I had yesterday. This was the same. A big explosion and then nothing.
You had a dream yesterday?
Well, of course I did. You had the same sort of dream.
I? Guy, you're mistaken. I don't remember dreaming.
Oh, now, Mary, you told me.
Guy, you're mistaken.
But, Mary, you...
Maybe you dreamed I had a dream. Maybe...
Well, yes, I might have done that, I suppose. Everything did seem sort of strange yesterday.
Oh, that's probably it. You better get dressed, dear. Today's the 15th. That's when the quarterly statement...
15th?
Yes.
Well, then it must have been a dream, because yesterday was the 15th.
Guy Burkhart got up, dressed, ate breakfast, and took the usual bus to work. Once again, everything seemed even brighter and newer than usual. And once again, he was puzzled when he noticed none of the old crowd on the bus.
Pardon me, please.
Look, don't shove so. Morning, Henry.
Morning. For God's sake, don't talk to me.
What is it? You being followed or something?
Don't you know? I was sure you remembered.
Remembered what?
I can't talk. This is my stop. Will you excuse me, please?
Well, Henry. Henry, for Pete's sake.
As in yesterday's dream, Guy Burkhart got off at his stop and took the elevator to the 98th floor. The speaker in the elevator purred a new commercial this time.
Marlin cigarettes. They're sanitized. Does your present cigarette make your throat feel raspy and unpleasant? Marlin cigarettes contain a miraculous new drug which actually gives you the sensation of smooth, creamy smoke. Marlin cigarettes. Marlin cigarettes.
He walked down the marble corridor to his office.
Good morning, Mr. Burkhart.
Good morning, Miss Horn.
Do you like my new hairdo?
Yes. Is Mr. Barth in?
No, sir. He had an appointment
with Mr. Dorchin at the Research Institute. I know.
You know?
Well, I guessed it anyway. And today is the 15th of June, and he won't be here to sign the quarterly statement, and I'm going nuts. Let me have a cigarette, will you?
Yes, sir. Try one of these. They're marlins.
I never heard of marlins before today. What are we, a bunch of guinea pigs?
Something wrong, Mr. Burkhart?
Wrong? Perish the thought, Miss Horn. Perish the thought.
He went to his desk and stared at the mail. Before he opened it, he knew that the factory distributor's envelopes contained an order for 12 new electronic computers. He knew that the Development Journal contained an article about a new method of transprinting selective brain circuits of human engineers onto the electric brain circuits of robot engineers to facilitate the operation of automatic factories. He knew that there was a complaint from Feinbeck and Sons about the Contro Chemicals' newest household robot circuit. After a long while, he forced himself to open them. They were exactly as he suspected.
Hello?
This is Swanson, Henry Swanson.
What is it?
Do you remember?
Remember what?
Just remember.
All right, now listen, Henry. Let's stop playing games. Yesterday, either I was dreaming or you snubbed me on the bus. Today, the same thing happened.
Oh, you do remember, thank heavens. I thought so when I saw you, but I couldn't be sure.
Well, what is it you want?
Tomorrow morning, when I get off the bus, you get off with me. Be casual. They may be watching.
Who may be watching? Swanson! Hello!
You buzzed, Mr. Burkhart?
Yes, I'm still out of cigarettes, sir. Would you buy me a pack of Kelvins?
Wouldn't you rather have Marlin?
I smoke Kelvins.
But, Mr. Burkhart, Marlins have that soft, creamy smoke that's so soothing to your throat.
Oh, you really believe that stuff?
Well, it's true. I wouldn't say this, Mr. Burkhart, except that, well, I've gotten to know you pretty well, and I've grown to admire you so much.
I see.
Would you mind, Mr. Burkhart, if I told you that for months now I've wanted to, well, just comfort you? I know how troubled you've been.
Well, you've never mentioned your feelings before, Miss Horn.
April. My first name's April.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a pretty name.
You see, I do have your welfare at heart. That's why when I see you smoking Kelvins and I know Marlins are so much better, won't you let me buy some of them for you, huh?
Well, I suppose so. Why not? Here, bring me a carton.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Burkhart. Guy.
I think you ought to go.
I'll be back.
There was something wrong. Something definitely peculiar about what was happening. The call from Henry Swanson. The strange behavior of his secretary, Miss Horn. These new products, the dream. Guy Burkhart went home that night feeling like a man in a nightmare.
Is that you, dear?
It's me.
Did you have a good day?
Fair.
Oh, before you sit down, will you go down in the cellar and put in a new fuse? The switch in the hall closet blew out. I shut it off.
Okay.
Supper will be ready in a minute, so don't start fooling around with that old boat hull you've been building.
I won't. Mary! Mary!
What is it?
Come down here. Hurry up.
What is it?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I was looking for a fuse, and I thought maybe I'd drop one under the boat hull, so I scratched around. Look, let me put the flashlight on it.
Well?
Look at the floor.
What about the floor?
It's supposed to be cement.
Well?
Well, it's copper. There's a thin layer of cement, but underneath it's metal. Look here. Underneath the concrete, more metal. And here, on the wall. see? Metal. Metal under the floor, behind the walls, every place.
Well, I don't really understand.
Mary, I know this sounds crazy, but somebody, for reasons I can't even begin to guess, has taken this house and replaced it with a clever imitation.
Guy.
Mary, I'm going to look around a little more.
Well, your dinner will be ready.
All right, save it for me. There are a couple of things I've got to figure out. The following morning, Guy Burkhart woke up screaming. He dragged himself into the kitchen where his wife Mary was preparing breakfast and discovered it was still June 15th. Mary, where's the morning paper? Where is it?
It's outside the door, I guess.
Uh-huh. June 15th.
You'd better hurry, dear. Today's the day Mr. Barth fills out the quarterly tax return.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Why?
He won't be there. He'll be at a meeting with that crackpot Dorchin at the Human Research Institute.
Mr. Dorchin?
He'll be there. And Miss Horn will have a new hairdo, and the elevator will be selling some new product, and Swanson...
What about Swanson?
Swanson, he said... I wonder if it's going to be the same today, or whether...
Guy, what in the world are you talking about?
Nothing, never mind. Where's my coat?
You haven't had any breakfast
yet. I don't want to miss my bus. I'll see you tonight.
Guy Burkhart got on his bus. There were the same unfamiliar faces, the same unusually new-looking buildings, the same unusually bright sunshine. And on the customary corner, Henry Swanson, pale and furtive, climbed aboard.
Excuse me, sir.
It's quite all right.
Do you remember the phone call?
Yes.
Oh, thank heaven. Get off at the next corner and follow me.
Where are you going?
There's an excavation for a building about a block down. Make sure you aren't followed. I'll go first. Burkhart. Here, behind the fence.
All right now, Henry, what's this all about?
I'm not sure. At first I thought perhaps they were Russians. Now I'm beginning to think they're Martians. No humans could have accomplished what they've accomplished.
Now, wait a minute. Start from the beginning, Henry. What's going on?
Look, Burkhart, peculiar things have been happening to you, right?
Yes.
A lot of your friends are missing. Your house seems changed.
Yeah. There's something stranger than that. The date. Today is June 15th. Yet I could swear yesterday was June 15th and the day before that.
You got it, friend. It's always June 15th. And you and I are the only ones who know it.
But why, Henry? How?
I'm not sure. I think it's some sort of mass hypnosis or something.
Well, why doesn't it work for us? My wife, Mary, doesn't remember a thing.
Somehow, when it happened, they missed us. We were protected from the full force of the rays or whatever they used. Burkhart, where were you on the night of the 14th about midnight?
Let me see, that was Sunday night.
Yes.
Yeah, I was down in the cellar under the boat I'm building.
I was in my dark room developing some pictures.
Well, this just doesn't make any sense to me. Russians, Martians. What makes you think that?
I've seen them.
Where?
At the end of the tunnel.
What tunnel?
The one they built under Tylertown.
A tunnel under Tylertown?
Yes, that's right. It's made out of copper or some alloy.
Copper? Wait a minute. I found a copper layer under my cellar floor last night.
So did I. That's how I discovered it. I found a way to get in, too. It's at the bottom of this excavation.
Holy mackerel. Henry, why don't we tell the police?
Because we can't trust them. Even the police may be Martians in disguise.
Oh, come on now. You're being melodramatic.
Oh, am I? Well, you just come with me.
Where?
Into the tunnel. I'll show you.
Henry Swanson led Guy Burkhart to a small hole in the side of the excavation. There he removed a cut-out piece of metallic substance and they crawled into a dimly lighted tunnel. They walked for what seemed like 2 miles until Swanson held his finger to his lips.
We've got to be quiet now.
Henry, this is fantastic. They've got a tunnel right under the whole town.
Oh, you haven't seen anything yet. There's a room a little farther down. We'll be able to look through a glass in the door.
Is it safe?
It's perfectly safe, unless one of them comes along. Oh, come on.
Okay.
Here. Now, Burkhart, look through this glass. Now, just so I know I'm not completely insane, tell me what you see.
Good Lord.
Well?
A tremendous panel with dozens of telescreens. And in front of each, a servo robot. They seem to be computing something.
Yes, I've watched them. They're evaluating data from the screens.
Have you gotten a chance to look at the data on those screens?
No. I've been afraid to go in. There might be a warning circuit somewhere.
Well, if we knew what those robots were working on, we could go to the authorities.
I'll risk it if you will.
All right, it's worth the chance. We're lost anyway.
Okay. Open the door. So far, so good.
Come on. Let's take a look at that data.
But don't interfere with the robots.
Don't worry. Here, let's look at this screen. Listen to this. Tests in the 47K12 group with Marlin cigarettes pulled 80% using the soft feminine approach. Indications are that an extension of this approach would influence at least 70% nationwide. The direct elevator pitch pulled only 10%. This should be abandoned and a new series of high persuasion personal elements introduced. Henry, do you know what this means?
Well, I haven't the faintest idea.
Well, I don't blame you. This is crazy, but it fits the facts when I think about it. Do you know who's behind this?
Martians?
No, not Martians, Henry. Humans.
What?
Humans who are interested in developing the perfect propaganda machine.
What?
I don't know who they are or how they've done it, but somehow they've taken Tylertown over.
Hypnosis.
Hypnosis, drugs, maybe some kind of a ray or something. However they do it, what happens is that they let us live through a single day. During that day, they pour all kinds of suggestions and propaganda into us. At the end of the day, they evaluate the results, see how we've reacted. And at midnight, they wash the day out of our minds, and the next morning we start the same day over again with different stimuli. Do you know what that means, Henry? Suppose one man learned how to influence people 100%. Why, in a year, he could sell us anything from freezers to political candidates.
Oh, wait a minute.
We're guinea pigs, Henry. This whole community is one big test tube for Dorchin's propaganda research.
Burkhart, what do we do?
I don't know, but somehow we've got to get out of this town and get to the FBI.
Oh, do you think we can?
It's worth a try. Come on.
Wait.
Huh? What is it?
Look through the door. There's somebody coming down the tunnel.
You've got to hide.
Behind the circuit box.
Yeah. Wait. Good Lord, it's Dorchin, the head of the research institute.
Quiet.
All right, Burkhart, come out. We know you're in this room. Miss Horn has informed us that you remember. I must warn you that it's useless to buck us. Come out peacefully. Let our maintenance crew adjust you properly so you don't remember from one experiment to the next. It will be quite painless. If you don't come out peacefully, we'll have to get you.
Henry, take this wrench. When I give the word, jump him.
But he may be armed.
Well, we've got nothing to lose.
Very well. I'm coming after you.
Now! Burkhart, I've killed him.
Now wait. Get his coat unbuttoned. Yeah. Maybe his heart is still beating.
Henry! What is it? What's wrong?
Look underneath his coat.
Heaven help us.
It's a robot. A humanoid robot designed to look like Dorchin.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Wait.
What's that?
It's a loudspeaker.
I told you it was useless, gentlemen.
Who are you?
Mr. Dorchin, naturally. The real Mr. Dorchin.
What are you trying to do to us?
Merely trying to prevent you from damaging my experiment, gentlemen.
You can't get away with this, Dorchin. Sooner or later, somebody, the FBI or somebody, is going to get wind of this madness.
Really, Burkhart, you're quite naive. Now, why not be reasonable and let the maintenance crews adjust you?
And if I refuse, I suppose you'll kill me.
That would be quite impossible.
Oh?
You see, Burkhart, you're already dead.
Dead?
You're shocked. It's quite true. You and everyone else in this town were killed by a premature atomic blast at the Contro Chemical Plant. The blast occurred at 7 a.m. on June 15th. That is the last thing imprinted on your minds. That is why you wake up screaming each morning.
No, it isn't true.
But it is. What I and my associates did was take the brain circuits from your dead bodies. We stored them in electrochemical batteries till we had a chance to rebuild the cities and begin our tests.
Do you think I believe a fantastic tale like that?
I imagine you find it incredible. Of course, we didn't rebuild everything exactly. After all, it only has to last for a single day, June 15th. At midnight, we turn off the power and wash out the memory of the day. You and your friend Swanson, unfortunately, have defective circuits. You remember.
Burkhart, it's no use. We're trapped. Give up.
No, not me.
What can we do?
We can make a run for it down the tunnel. Come on.
It's useless, Burkhart.
Keep going.
It's useless, useless, useless.
Now, if this door is open. Yeah, it opens. Oh. Oh, no. No, I don't believe it. Swanson, look.
They were standing on a ledge of smooth, finished metal. At their feet, the ledge dropped away into a chasm so deep they could not see the bottom. Beyond was only a glare so bright that their eyes could not stand to look into it. And yet, just at the limit of their vision, something towered. Something so huge it was almost inconceivable. Something.
Burkhart?
Yes?
This is Dorchin. Now do you understand why it's useless?
The great looming figure moved closer. It seemed to take shape now, and yet it was so gigantic as to be unbelievable. It came closer. The glare was partially blocked. And then, Guy Burkhart knew that the towering shape was none other than Dorchin himself.
You see how I did it, Burkhart? I took your brain circuits and had them reduced so they could be transferred to tiny humanoid mannequins. That's what you are, Burkhart. A tiny miniature of yourself. And this city, this whole experiment I'm conducting, is built on a tabletop.
It was the morning of June 15th, and Guy Burkhart woke up out of a dream, screaming.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features another story by tonight's author, Frederick Pohl. It's the second installment of his novel, Slave Ship, the story of a world engaged in the wildest of all possible non-wars, where the order of the day was even wilder still. Spare every animal and throw the men to the wolves. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Tunnel Under the World, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Pohl, a former advertising executive
who is now one of our leading science fiction writers. It was adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Les Damon, Ginger Jones, Bob Hastings, Connie Lemke, Stan Early, and Kermit Murdoch. Your narrator was John Larkin. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Next week, listen to another adult science fiction story on X-1. Now let's visit with Fibber McGee and Molly on the NBC Radio Network.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from the 14th of March, 1956. The story penned by well-known science fiction author Frederick Pohl, marking his first adapted on X-1. It was first published in Galaxy Science Fiction magazine in January of 1955, a monthly publication he would go on to edit in 1959 for about a decade. His tales that played with the idea of time seem most attractive to the producers of X-1, evidenced in part by the last story of his featured on the series called Target One.
Doctor, what would you say was the most important scientific discovery of the 20th century?
I suppose Einstein's equation, E equals MC squared.
Exactly. This formula unlocked the atom. Without it, there would have been no atomic energy, and consequently, no bomb, no war.
The formula did not cause the war, Mr. President, nor did the man who discovered it. He was one of the finest human beings who ever lived, a man utterly dedicated to the pursuit of peace and harmony.
Yes, exactly. That is what will make your task so abhorrent, Doctor.
What is this task, Mr. President?
Quite simply, it is the murder of Albert Einstein.
Are you insane?
Perhaps. Only history will record that.
But how in the name of heaven Albert Einstein died in 1956?
I am well aware of that. In order to commit this murder, Doctor, you will have to travel back in time.
Travel back? You mean that...
I mean that our scientists have succeeded in their experiments. Parachronon penetration has been achieved.
It's fantastic.
Yes, so were atomic energy and rockets to the moon and radio waves long before both of those.
You're actually suggesting that I return to the early 20th century to commit a murder?
Yes.
But why Einstein? Why not the men who took his contributions and twisted them into ghastly inhuman weapons? Why not them?
Because others would replace them. There are many minds so filled with contempt for their own lives that they would be willing to destroy others, so warped with hate that they might even enjoy the job. No. No, it must be Einstein.
Well, then why me? Why not select some murderer, some fiend?
Because you are a man of the highest morality. This task must not be performed by some twisted monster. It must be done by a man of integrity who fully realizes his responsibility. To do otherwise would be to degrade ourselves and our victim. Come here, to the window. Do you see that covered barge lying in the East River?
Yes.
That barge is the finest laboratory we could assemble. Inside it is the mechanism for complete K-meson penetration, maintaining a stable configuration. In effect, it is a floating time machine.
You've tested it?
It was tested last week. Professor Milton Waxman went back 40 years in time and returned.
A few moments from Frederick Pohl's Target One, his last story, adapted on X-1. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of Exploring Tomorrow, called The Convict. This first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on December 11th, 1957.
Many of the colonies of this planet here have been founded and built by misfits, rebels, rejects from their own societies, the transported criminals. And they've made good men in those new frontiers. But not all men are good men in a bad spot. When you open a new area, whether it's a new planet or a new continent, it takes tough men, men of strength and determination. Among the men of that type in any culture, many are rebels. They turn up in the criminal courts. Such men make fine colonists. But not all rebels are colonists, builders. A lot of them are just plain, lazy, sick-souled criminals. Now, Mars is a cold planet. It's nearly 50 million miles further from the sun than Earth. It gets proportionately less heat. Its air is thin and low in oxygen. Its water is scarce. It's not an easy place to live. Some men will live in unpleasant places by choice because they have this pioneering spirit or a sense of adventure. Other men have very little choice at all. When Robert Black was found guilty of the crime of armed robbery, the court gave him the usual choice. 15 years in prison or a permanent exile to Mars. The judge asked him which he preferred.
I'll take Mars.
It was so ordered.
Harrington, I'll see Robert Black now.
Morning, Mr. Jenner.
What is it this time, Black? In trouble with the mine foreman again?
No, not this time, but if he keeps pushing...
Don't start that again.
I'm sorry, Mr. Jenner.
Now, look, Black, I'm supposed to be the colonial administrator here. Remember, I have work to do. Now, what's on your mind?
I want to go home.
Well, you're certainly welcome to. You know where your dormitory room is. Go ahead and go home. Why bother me with it?
You know what I mean. I want to go back to Earth.
Earth, that's impossible, and you know it. You made your choice 10 years ago. You wanted to be a free colonist instead of a prisoner, and you got what you wanted.
Free? You call this free? I work my hands off, clear to the elbows in those freezing coal mines. I work 8-10 hours a day for what? For a few lousy bucks? And where can I spend it? No place. I'd rather be in jail.
No place to spend it. You seem to do a pretty good job getting rid of your paycheck in the bars in Marsport.
Why not? What else is there to do with it?
Black, a lot of men in your position have done something with it. They saved their money and bought a little pressure dome of their own. They got married and had kids and tried to make Marsport into a real city instead of drinking up every cent they've made.
Me get married? It's a laugh. None of the dames on Mars have anything to do with a con.
Oh, you mean they won't have anything to do with you personally, don't you? Other convicts have done something with themselves here, but you haven't, and you never will. You know why?
You tell me.
Because you can't change your way of thinking. You had to come here because you couldn't keep out of trouble, and you've made trouble for yourself and everybody else since you came. Drunken brawls, arguments with your foreman, everything. Someday you'll get in a real jam.
Now look, Mr. Jenner, I try to get along. Honest, I do. I just don't like being pushed, that's all.
Oh, sure. Everybody picks on
you. Mr. Jenner, I just can't take Mars anymore. Look at my fingers. They're always cold. My feet are always cold. I haven't been warm for 1 minute in the last 10 years. They can't heat up the mines, even because this stinking little planet's cold all the way through.
Well, what do you want me to do? Move Mars closer to the sun just to please you?
Look, Mr. Jenner, please. I'm serious. Send me back to Earth. I'll spend the rest of my time in prison there. I won't care, just so long as it's on Earth where it's warm.
I just can't do that, Black. You had your chance to make your choice 10 years ago, and you made it. Neither one of us can change that.
Yeah, but it ain't fair. I'd have just 5 more years to do time if I'd taken a 15-year sentence, then I'd be free. The way it is, I got to spend the rest of my life here. That ain't fair.
I couldn't send you back if I wanted to. I'm just a civil service appointee, not a judge of the court. If you want to spend 5 years in jail, I can accommodate you right here on Mars. But I can't send you back to Earth. And that's final.
But Mr. Jenner...
That's all, Black. Unless you have something else to see me about, please go. I'm busy.
Look. All right. All right, if that's the way you're
going
to be...
That's the way I'm going to be. Goodbye, Black.
Goodbye.
many men who can't take no for an answer. But they don't all have that characteristic in quite the same way. The pioneer, the scientist, these are men who can't take no for an answer, and they plow their way through to an answer that works. But not all men are of that type.
Bartender, give me another beer.
Jenna, that big shot. White guy. Sure, he don't worry about somebody freezing to death on his ball ice. Not him. He can go home when he wants to. Who's this sharpie?
Hey, give me a glass of beer, bartender.
Space service uniform. Wonder what he's doing in a cheap joint like this. Those guys usually have money to burn.
Oh, boy, this beer sure flat.
It's this low pressure it does. It takes all the fizz out of it.
Oh, is that so? Well, at least it's cold enough, huh?
Oh, yeah, everything's cold on Mars. You, been to service long?
3 years. This is my first Mars run. Thought I'd take a look at Marsport while they service my ship.
Your ship? You don't hardly look old enough to be the skipper of a spaceship.
That's what they all tell me. I may not be as old as you, old-timer, but it's still my ship.
Old-timer, right away he starts riding the guy right off the fence. Yeah, that's pretty good. You know, a young fellow like you with a crew of 10 under you.
Oh, no. It's just the two of us, me and my navigator. We're giving the Skyfire its test run.
Oh, how can two men handle a spaceship?
Hey, look, don't you watch the newscast, mister? Skyfire is one of the new models with the Mark Hine drive. Fastest spaceship ever built.
I guess I'm a little behind the times. New drive, huh?
That's right. Hottest little thing in the sky.
Must not be as complicated as the old jobs if just two guys can run it.
Well, I hate to admit it, but it doesn't take much training to run one. A baby could do it.
Oh, man. Things sure have changed since the last time I was on a ship.
That's so. How long has that been?
10 years. Been here on Mars for 10 years.
Yeah? Are you, are you...
A convict? Oh, no. I come here my own free will. Got the old pioneer blood in me, I guess. But, we don't usually talk about it very much. You know, out here, one fellow's as good as the next one if he behaves himself.
Yeah, that's the way it should be, I guess. 10 years. Well, I guess you've been here long enough to get used to this light gravity, huh?
Sure. Don't even notice it anymore.
The trouble with being in the space service is that you never get used to any particular gravity. It might be 10 G's 1 minute and zero the next. But you can get used to that eventually.
I imagine you would. My name's Bob Black.
Well, I'm pleased to meet you. Mine's Carson, Peter Carson.
Hi. Are you going to be here long?
Oh, a couple of days. Skyfire will be ready to go in an hour or so, but my navigator's in the hospital for checkup. Twisted his ankle getting off the ship.
Oh, that's too bad. Hey, can I buy you a beer? We're both in.
Sure, thanks.
Bartender, two more here.
Say, if you've been here 10 years, you must know Marsport pretty well, huh?
Yeah, pretty well.
Well, look, there must be livelier places than this. Maybe you could tell me where to find a little excitement.
Sure. I know a couple of places. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take you there myself.
Ah, good enough. Come on, let's get out of here. We got far to go?
No, about a quarter of a mile.
Oh, let's take a cab, man. I don't feel like walking that far in this cold wearing an oxygen mask.
Sure, we can pick one up.
Oh, my head.
Yeah, kid, you really hung one on last night.
Oh. And where am I?
Open your eyes and look around. This ain't the good ship Lollipop.
Hey, we're aboard the Skyfire. Hey, you're not supposed to be here. How'd you get through the guards at the gate?
Well, it wasn't easy, pal, but you helped. Now, you just lean back and relax. You're in no condition to try anything funny.
Hey, that's my gun you got there.
That's right. Earth. Beautiful, green, sunshiny, warm Earth. I'm sick and tired of this freezing hellhole. You're going to take me home, buddy.
Colonial Administration, Jenna speaking.
Mr. Jenna, this is Colonel O'Neill, Space Service.
Oh, yes, Colonel. What can I do for you?
Well, something pretty serious has come up. Would you check your records on a man named Black? Robert Black?
Well, I might not need to check them. I know the man personally. What's he done now?
Well, I take it then you wouldn't be surprised if you were in trouble.
Not in the least. Why? What happened?
One of our spaceships was stolen early this morning.
What? Well, how could a man steal a spaceship?
A man couldn't steal one of the old kind. But this is a radically new type, small, compact, and easy to operate. Be almost as easy as stealing a car.
And you think Black had something to do with it?
Looks like it. He was the last one seen with Peter Carson, and his fingerprints are on the ladder of the takeoff pit. We're questioning the guards now, but it looks as if Carson and Black took off in the Skyfire together.
Incredible. Who is Peter Carson, by the way?
One of our young trainees. Pretty bright, but just a kid.
Oh?
He's got a funny streak in him, though. The psychologist should never have passed it. Still, I never thought he'd do anything like this.
What do you mean? What's wrong with him?
Well, he's a bit of a braggart. Likes to claim he's something he's not. I'm no psychologist, but I'd say that he's a compulsive liar.
And the two of them stole a spaceship. Well, they ought to make a fine pair.
Now, tell me, can Black navigate and operate a spaceship?
Of course not. The only trip he ever made was 10 years ago when the court sent him here. He doesn't know how to operate a spaceship.
Then they'll make a fine pair, all right.
How's that?
Neither does Carson.
Criminal in jail is more or less forced to admit that he did make some kind of a mistake. Curious thing is, if you ask such a man what mistake he made, he'd have to say something like, well, you see, I didn't see that cop that was hiding down there in the doorway. He views it as a mistake in procedure. He doesn't recognize that he was fundamentally wrong in trying to make a living that way.
You're outsmarted, old smart boy Jenner. Goes to show you, kid, you can't keep a good man down.
Yeah, sure.
2 hours, I'll be back home again. Back to nice, warm, comfortable earth.
Hey, Black, I'm scared we're going to crack up.
Ah, shut up. Are you still trying to give me that phony line?
I tell you, Black, I don't know anything about spaceships.
Don't give me that, will you? We took off okay, didn't we? We're on course, aren't we? And you did all the plotting and the piloting, didn't you?
I swear all I know is what I read in the textbook at the academy. And I watched the captain take the ship to Mars. Any fool can take a spaceship off the ground, but it takes a trained pilot to land
one. You've been giving me that stuff ever since we started. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't believe it.
Please, Black, before it's too late, let me get on that radio and call the space service. They can get a ship up here.
Shut up. That's what you like, ain't it? Get the space service up here. I see through your dodge, and I'm not buying it. I don't mind getting caught on Earth because they can't deport me twice. They'll put me in a nice, warm cell. But they're not going to nab me up here and send me back to that frigid hell I just left. You understand?
Yeah, listen.
Shut up, I said. I read over the pilot's manual. I read over the specifications on the ship. A baby could handle it. Remember? That's what you said. A baby could handle it. And you're right. I can land this thing myself. So don't give me any hooey about you not knowing how.
Please, Black. We haven't got much time.
Shut up.
Please, Black. Let me use the radio.
Shut up. All right, now that's better. Now let's get ready to land this crate. We got less than 2 hours.
Gun or no gun, I gotta do something.
Sit back down and stay away from that radio.
I'm gonna call him. You can't stop
me. Get away, I told you.
You
stupid, crazy little punk. Now I gotta take this ship down by myself. Everything's okay. Just gotta be calm, that's all. Check the time. All right, that's good. Now, according to the radar map, I'm over Wyoming. No town around. Right smack in the middle of nowhere. Good. That means no cops. Now, check the time again. Don't rush it now. Check the instruments. Height, velocity, direction. All okay. Time, 10 seconds. Back to Earth. Boy, nice, warm, green Earth. No more cold, red sand. It's time. 5 seconds to cut off. 3, 2, 1. Cut! We're still falling. Yeah, I guess I'm okay. Ship didn't fall more than 10 or 15 feet. What's that? Radiation detector. Fall must have broken the shielding around the atomic engine. I gotta get out of here. Gotta get out of that airlock and run. This radiation could kill me. It'll kill me if I don't get out. Oh, no. I gotta get out of here. I gotta get out of here. I'll die.
I gotta get out and see that good old warm old earth. I gotta get out.
Colonial Administration, Jenner speaking. Now, this is Colonel O'Neill, Mr. Jenner. I just got word from Earth that our two runaways have been found.
You mean they actually made it to Earth?
Well, it wasn't a good landing. The engines were cut off too soon, and the Skyfire dropped about 15 feet, but that ship's pretty nearly foolproof.
What happened?
Our man Carson has a bullet in him. Doctor says in bad shape, but he'll live.
And Black?
Funny thing. Sat the ship down in a desolate part of Wyoming. The fall shorted the radiation detector, and evidently Black thought the ship was full of radiation. He got outside, started running, and just kept running until he dropped.
You mean he got away?
Well, he didn't get far. It's January, you know, wintertime in Wyoming. He ran into the teeth of a howling blizzard at sub-zero temperatures.
Yeah?
Froze to death before they could reach him.
Characteristic of a man who wants to do things the quick, easy way, that he doesn't like to take the time and trouble to look up the data as to what's going to happen when he gets there. It would have been easy enough for Black to check and find out that it was winter on Earth. But you see, Mars doesn't have the same seasons Earth does. Mars' year is about twice as long as ours. I guess Black had sort of lost track of what it was like in Wyoming in January.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday from the 11th of December 1957. That was the first broadcast in that short-lived series from the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that does it for this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.